No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote.
Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People Their Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. Along with my co-host, Maria Sanchez, we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. So join in the discussion by calling in at 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. Or you can Skype us your questions at BBSRADIO and the number 1. Tonight, we're very excited to have a couple of guests with us that were at the Women's March on Washington yesterday. In the immortal words of Beyonce, who rules the world? Girls. And they showed it yesterday. A million people showed up around the world to say we're here and you need to recognize that. In D.C., we had 500,000 people. Denver had over 1,000. Chicago, over 150,000. Boston, 125,000. There were actually 130 cities worldwide, including Paris, London, Mexico City, and Antarctica. 200 inaugural buses were given permits, parking permits in the district, and 1,800 were given parking permits for the march. So it was just overwhelming. And we have we're going to have two guests, but first let me introduce my favorite political woman, Maria Sanchez.
Wow, that's a big compliment coming from you, Michael. Thank you for that. You didn't mention that in Los Angeles they estimated 750,000.
No way. That many?
Yep.
I read about Los Angeles was that they were overwhelmed, but I never saw a number. But
they said that it took it, so it was 1 mile the route, and it was so filled with folks that at some points there was no movement because the density in the crowd was bigger than the width of the street and the other areas. So, but it was peaceable, or peaceful, I should say. But yeah, that's what they said. It was a 1 mile route only that it came to a standstill at some points. Well, so who knows about the crowd estimates, though, right?
Right. Well, you know, but isn't that the most amazing statistics? 1 million people around the world and not one arrest, not one arrest. So, you know, not only do the marchers know what they're doing, but not only did they come out and do it, but they know what they're doing, too. Right. It was peaceful and just amazing. And we have with us Bonnie Gillespie, who's a retired railroad executive who went down there. Bonnie, are you with us? Bonnie.
I'm here.
Okay, good. How was the tell us about the march. What was the experience like?
Well, the experience was, I mean, I've been to quite a few of these in Washington, D.C. This was by far the largest, other than I did go to the Million Man March, although I'm not a man. But this was pretty amazing. It was very peaceful. The speakers were eloquent. They made their thoughts known very well. I was able to stand between both jumbotrons, even though I couldn't hear a word of what people were saying. Trying to get out of the crowd was almost impossible because it was just shoulder to shoulder for miles. And something that Maria said earlier is that it came to a standstill in Los Angeles. The only reason it didn't come to a standstill in Washington, D.C. is that the people split off into separate streets and were marching, blocking all of downtown Washington, D.C. and the whole thing peaceful. I know, it was amazing.
And was it an upbeat mood? How did people, you know, the crowd itself, you know, there's a lot of people that have been angry about what's gone on in this election, but it didn't seem to me that these people were angry.
The people were not angry, but there were a lot of somewhat offensive signs that people were carrying that I believe were kind of unnecessary. Even though I'm not a big fan of our new president, I thought that it was wrong to have signs that said "fuck Trump."
Wow, I agree with you.
I mean, and stuff like that. And also, there were some signs that showed parts of bodies that were not very kind. But most of it was very peaceful. People seemed to be having a good time. There were a lot of pink hats.
I hear that's the pussy hats, right?
Yeah.
The pussy hats, yes.
Yeah, amazing that those people made them. Go ahead, Maria. I'm sorry.
I was going to ask, because Michael and I last week, when we were talking about that this was happening in our various communities, we were wondering why so soon, and why not wait until the first 100 days or the first 6 months or until something really egregious happens. And I understand from my friends who went to the march yesterday in Los Angeles that their agenda, if you will, was different than the East Coast agenda, which, correct me if I'm wrong, the East Coast reason was that it was a protest. And my girlfriends here in Southern California say, no, it was to show solidarity to women, about women, for women, and how far we've come. So it was much more affirming in that regard. And I don't know if that has to do with the coasts or if it's to whom you're speaking.
It might be to whom you're speaking, because I found this to be more of an affirmation of how far women have come since back in the 60s, 50s, et cetera, especially with the speakers that they had, Gloria Steinem, Angela Davis, Cecile Richards. They also had celebrities, which weren't of very much interest to me. But to see these women that were iconic in the women's movement coming out and just talking about how far we've come, and we've got to keep on going that way, and we can't let things that we don't agree with get us down.
So that to me, that's a hopeful message.
Right.
I love giving and instilling and holding hope. And so I'm glad to hear you say that, because Michael and I were wondering, even though we disagree politically, we agree a lot philosophically. And so it seems maybe that perhaps folks were, the PR had more teeth and bark than the actual process itself.
Right. I mean, and I think the whole thing is, go ahead, Michael.
No, you, Bonnie, go ahead. We want to hear what you have to say.
Well, I was just
going to
say, I think, I mean, most of the women that I know went, I mean, I would say, as you know, both of you, that Washington is a 91% Democrat city, and that people here were pissed off that Hillary didn't win. And that didn't really show up at this. I mean, there were certainly people that made that quite well known, but it wasn't the highlight of the whole event. The highlight of the event was being there and showing solidarity for women, people with disabilities, people that are immigrants. It was an amazing group of people.
Well, and it seems to me that if there's somebody that's good at dealing with reality, it's women. You know, women have to deal with the practicality of life every day and raising children and the other things they do in life. So it doesn't surprise me that women have come around to say, we're here and we're going to stand up for our rights, but we also realize that this man's our president.
Right, and I
well,
and
that's
know, been,
maybe what made it so peaceful.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's right. I mean, there were those signs that said Trump is not our president, dump Trump, and all that. But you know, that can't happen, and he is our president. And I think that's sad. But maybe we can hope that he does a better job than he appears that he's going to do at this point. And I think that was the idea, or the feeling of a lot of people that were there.
Well, and I also think that it shows what these women showed me anyway, was that we're all responsible for the outcome. It's not a matter of just him or of Congress. It's a matter for all of us to get involved. And I think the more of us that get involved, the better off we'll be. You know, we live in Washington, D.C., where the number one thing is politics, and we have less than 50% of the eligible voters vote in elections. That's unbelievable to me. So maybe the upside of all this is that, you know, people get more involved.
Yes, that would be the greatest news. The takeaway is that people realize they can't sit on their hands, that their vote does matter, their opinions do matter, their time matters, the feet on the boots on the ground matters, knocking on doors, et cetera, making the phone calls, getting out the vote. All of that matters. And those of us who've been passionate about it, we know that. So maybe this is going to open up the eyes of your average person who just leaves it to others.
That's true. I mean, Michael Moore was one of the speakers, and he suggested that everybody call their congressman every day until something changes. And it was mostly, his thoughts were mostly on things like abortion and immigration and the areas that are important to most people in the United States.
Well, I hope you told Mr. Moore that you call your senator every day.
I did say that, yes. Well, actually, when you call your congressman, I did yell out that we didn't have one.
We don't have one with the vote, do
and
we?
Other places don't have congressmen, they have congress members.
There you are. I mean, it seems to me that there was a very clear message delivered yesterday, and I think it's important. And you know, one of the primary things, this is one of the reasons that I thought Donald Trump was not going to win, because in politics, you don't mess with women in America. Mm-hmm. You don't mess. They do vote in larger numbers than men. And they you know, they can be an overwhelming force. I was involved in the protests of the 1960s against the war. But what ended the war were women, were mothers who got tired of seeing their sons and daughters coming home and, you know, being killed in body bags, coming home and for a war that they didn't understand. They didn't understand the purpose. What was the purpose of it? So they really ended the war as much as anybody. And they are women are a formidable force.
I think what we can take away with, though, Michael, is because what you're saying is historically true, but the discontent ran deeper than just gender.
Yes, it did.
It did run.
And I think it runs
deeper
than gender now.
It does run deeper than gender. It runs on politics, wars. Most people don't want to be in wars, and to spout that we're going to fight with other countries that don't agree with us, and the idea of making America first. America has always been first in my mind, but not to the extent that we're not a global world now. We all work together, and we need to be able to continue to do that.
Well, let me ask you, was there a theme that just came forth to you? I mean, that, you know, did you see a common theme through what everybody was saying, and what would that be?
Well, the common theme was to take care of our own people that do have disabilities, immigrants. We're all immigrants. You know, just to take care of America first, but don't lose sight of the importance of people in the rest of the world that we need to work with. We're not going to change this country by saying that we're bringing back jobs. The jobs that they're talking about bringing back aren't coming back.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And was that something that you think the women at the march really, you know, was that a primary issue? Was jobs, are the issues for women that you heard expressed at that march, are they the same pretty much as the issues for men? Jobs,
I think,
security.
So.
Yeah.
I think so. I think you know, a lot of it was that we need to have women in charge, which I tend to agree with, that women would possibly do a better job than what we're faced with right now. But, you know, to get into a position that we now have ourselves in with a president that is not extremely popular, we need to be able to work with him and maybe make him better.
Mm-hmm.
I can see that happening.
Yeah, and that's positive too, right? And that's really what we need to to do, right? We do need to come together. I mean, that's the only thing that you know, the only concern, like Maria expressed originally, was I don't want anything that's going to be more discordant, you know. So at first I thought maybe we should give them a little more time before women get out there, but I support what they did in the end. I do.
Well, especially the way that it went down. We have Mara online too, also.
Good. Mara, are you there?
I'm here.
All right, good. Well, Mara and Bonnie actually know each other pretty well.
Do.
And Mara went with a group. We've got Bonnie on the line too. Mara went with a group of women down to the march. Tell us, Mara, what was your experience like?
Well, I got to tell you, it was nothing I've ever experienced in D.C. before. I'm a D.C. native. I grew up in the Maryland suburbs. I was inspired to go. My cousin called and mentioned that she was going to fly in from Cincinnati with three of her friends. And I thought, well, if they can do that, I can certainly, you know, get myself down there from Frederick. So I decided to go, and then a friend of mine that lives in Montgomery County wanted to go, so I picked her up, and we met everybody in DuPont Circle, and we were going to take the metro down from DuPont Circle, but we got in there, and it was so packed, it became apparent that the group of seven of us that ended up together were not going to get on a train together and be able to stay together, so we decided to walk from DuPont Circle down to the mall. And
that's a good distance. If our listeners don't know, she's talking about a couple of miles from DuPont Circle
right.
down to the mall. Go ahead, Mara.
Right. No. So I did have my Fitbit on. So by the end of the day, just so you know, I put on over 20,000 steps. So
wow.
So yes, it was good. I got my steps in that day. we ended up getting to the mall. We crossed the mall at 15th Street, and we got over to Independence Avenue. And then we walked down Independence in front of the Forrestal Building and made our way just across the street from the Hirshhorn. And we figured that was as good as we were going to get because the crowd was so thick at that point. And I believe the stage was down at 3rd and Independence, just around that area. So that was several blocks away from where we were standing, and there was no more room. You weren't going to go anywhere, especially with a crowd of what ended up being seven women. And we stood there shoulder to shoulder for a little over 3 hours. And,
I'm surprised I didn't see you, Mara, because I was at the Forrestal Building as well.
Oh, were you? Really?
Yeah, I was there for a good 2 hours, yeah.
Oh, wow. Well, yeah, so we were there, and we picked that spot. Like I said, we kind of got to a point where we really couldn't move with that big a group of girls and stay together, you know, any further in. But we picked that spot because the organizers, and a shout out to them for so many things, but they had speaker systems and screens set up, and it, you know, we could very clearly hear the speakers. And so we stood there a little over 3 hours, and we were shoulder to shoulder with people. It was calm. I mean, there were, you know, every once in a while there were chants here and there, that kind of thing, and people were really creative with their signage and all sorts of messaging that they had, it was really peaceful. And you know, I mean, getting myself to go down there, of course, you know, let's face it, in our world today, it takes a certain amount of, I would think, a little bit of courage maybe to place oneself in a crowd that size, especially at, you know, a political theme, you know, event. But I never felt unsafe in any way, shape, or form. People were respectful of one another. People were looking out for one another. I believe someone not too far from us had a medical emergency, and people were, you know, tracking down a policeman or, you know, somebody to help this person, and well, making way for, you know, people to come in to help that person. And
well, and that's the bottom line, right, is that we need to be respectful. Maria said earlier that she and I don't agree on everything, but we're able to have a discussion. And the reason that we're able to have a discussion is that we respect each other. I respect Maria's opinion, even when it doesn't agree with mine. And so I think that's an important takeaway, that we respect each other, because that's the beginning of a dialogue.
Well, and you not feeling unsafe is a testimony to that, even though, of course, most folks who were there for the same cause. But there wasn't that, well, if you're not for this, then that means you're not for that, kind of where you're splitting hairs and women come first, or reproductive rights are first, or free speech is first, or whatever. It was all about one for all and all for one, which I think women do very well collaboratively, too.
Well, and so, Bonnie, if you had to, let me ask both of you this question, but first, Bonnie, if you had to take away one thing from the march, what would it be? What would be the one most important thing you think you took away from the march?
I think getting more involved in what's going on, you know, showing that we have an interest in keeping America a great country for all, not just for the people that are spouting hate and disrespect for everybody else.
And how about you, Mara? What was the one big takeaway for you?
I agree with Bonnie. For myself, I think it was a moment of reflection on my own circumstance while listening to stories. People from, you know, all over the country that have had other different experiences growing up than I have, and, you know, many other differences in their lives, and trying to imagine myself in the circumstances of, you know, that they may have grown up in. And, you know, I found it eye-opening and uplifting all at the same time. And it really did make me feel like, okay, yeah, I got to get on the stick here and get more involved, and not just talk about it, you know, do something.
Which is what Michael alluded to, right, Michael, with what happened in November.
Yeah, right. And you know what? I think that's the other piece, Mara, I think, and Bonnie. I think the first piece is a respect, and the other piece to starting the conversation is finding those things that we have in common. You know, looking at other people's experiences, like you said, Mara, and finding those things that are common to our humanity. And I think that, you know, certainly women can all relate to each other. They have common experiences no matter where they are. And I think that you know, if we can all talk about those common experiences, it'll just make us closer.
I have a comment, and I don't mean it to be incendiary, but actually a friend of mine who is in the entertainment industry and Jewish, who voted for Trump, he said to me, Maria, the women's largest march occurred on November 8th of 2016, when 30 million women marched into the voting booth and they elected Donald Trump as president.
Ooh.
Well, we can never forget that. That 30 million people, women and men, voted for Donald Trump. Many of them were women, I think but from the sounds of what went on yesterday, I don't think that these women have forgotten that. I think they've said, okay, you're here, but don't forget that the 30 the people that voted for you, 30 million voted for you. 33 million voted against you. I think that was part of the message, too, yesterday, right?
Uh-huh.
Well, there was also something, too, is that if you, and I figured this out before I went to the march, that if you took California out of the mix, Donald Trump would have won by 1.4 million votes. Because he won, I mean, because Hillary Clinton won by 4 million votes in California. You know, and so it was just the whole day was just in respecting each other, and it was a lot of young people that were out there.
My experience post election was it was the younger women that were really rattled. I mean, I have friends whose daughters didn't go to work. They were so afraid of what had just transpired. I didn't understand that so much. I guess, is it the Planned Parenthood issue that has the younger gals so scared?
It's because it's something that I would think so, because it wasn't something that I particularly grew up with. It came in the time of Gloria Steinem and all. We had to fight for our rights, and I think that the younger people, or at least what it appeared with the signs and stuff that they had, is that those rights that they've become accustomed to may go away.
Now, see, I don't see, because even my sons, who all voted for Hillary Clinton, said to me about the Planned Parenthood issue, and I said, abortion's never going to be taken away in my lifetime, and I'm pro-life and a Catholic, but I there's no way that I would stand by and let that transpire. No way. So if somebody like me says that, I would think that the majority of women wouldn't let that happen either.
I think that was part of the message yesterday, was that if you're going to take it away, you're going to have to face a bunch of angry women. And that's
absolutely.
And that's not something that anybody should take lightly. I can just tell you briefly a brief story that I had to make a delivery one time of some documents at a function, and the president had come in, and the Secret Service stopped me and weren't going to let me in the door. But fortunately, the two women that I worked for were both pregnant, and they came storming across the room, and I turned to the Secret Service and I said, well, they're taking up with them. And they looked at these two mad pregnant women and they said, okay, you can come in.
Never mind.
We're tough, but we're not that tough. I think that was part of the message. So, ladies, let me ask you, because Maria and I are going to go off and talk about some other things, but we want to know, any last comment that you want to make, Maura, before we thank you and move on?
One thing that I guess was pointed out yesterday by one of the speakers, and I think it is important to note, the Women's March, it was not accomplished by billionaires or through corporate sponsorship or anything like that. It was initially an event that was to occur in one city that soon became not only national but global. It began with, you know, one woman posting, you know, something on social media, and then, you know, that a group of her, you know, friends got together and they planned and they pulled this off. It was pulled off by a couple of community organizers. So that in of itself was, you know, really inspirational. And you know, that I've pretty much have never seen anything like what I saw yesterday, and I'm not sure I'll see that again. It was an incredible experience.
Well, thanks for being part of it, and thanks for being part of the show. How about you, Bonnie? Anything you want to add?
No, not really. Everything Maura said, I agree with. I mean, it was just, it's amazing that this event could be planned in 2 months and come off as well and as peaceful as it did.
I would agree. Well, it's inspirational, frankly.
And that's because women were running things instead of men. Yeah, we would have put it off.
You're such a feminist, Michael.
Theoretical feminist. I like to point that out, because Mrs. Brown would fight with you on the practical feminist side. But theoretically, yes, I'm a big supporter of women. And the two women that have joined us tonight, just so that we can be perfectly honest, are both very dear friends of mine. I've known Maura since she was 3 years old, and I've known Bonnie for 30 years. So I've known Bonnie since she was 3 years old as well.
There you go.
I want to thank you both for going to the march. I couldn't go because my leg's in a cast, but thanks for representing, and thanks for coming on the show. And we'll talk to both of you again soon, I'm sure.
Yes.
Thanks very much.
Thank you for your activism and putting your money where your mouth is, and congruence and all of that. It's really inspirational.
Thank you for having us on. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. And Marie and I are going to take a little break, and then we'll be right back. And here's a message from Beyonce. She says, listen. Listen to women, and I agree. We'll be right back.
Listen to the song here in my heart, a melody I start but can't complete. Listen to the sound from deep within. It's only beginning to find release. Oh, the time has come for my dreams to be heard. They will not be pushed aside and turned into your own.
And we're back. And now we're going to talk about some other stuff. That, again, was just great to have those two women. And I just think this was an amazing event around the world. And I hope something positive comes out of it.
Well, and here I have statistics, and mine are from USA Today, and mm-hmm. they differ just a little from yours. It says that 2.6 million people took part in about 670 marches in all 50 states and 32 yep. countries, with the wow. largest taking place in Washington. And yet in the same edition, that's when they said that there were 750,000 in Los Angeles, which would be more than your 500,000
yeah,
in D.C. Right. So, but regardless, we got, even if there's 100 or 200,000 wrong here or there, it's still over 2 million people throughout
yeah,
the world.
It was an amazing event, and I think that you know, as we talked about a little bit in a break, Maria, that it's a positive momentum. You know,
yes.
it can't be divisive. We have to stop being divided. This should have taught us, you know, the last 4 years, especially the way Congress has acted with each other, should teach us something about, you know, trying to get along with each other, trying to find common ground, and trying to move the country forward, because the country has spoken. I don't care how you look at this election.
Exactly.
We're pretty much divided. And it is my considered opinion. I was a Hillary Clinton superdelegate. I believe that she was a better candidate. But I also believe that if she was elected, we'd be going through the same exact thing right now. The only difference is that it would be Trump people that were organizing demonstrations. And it would be people on the other side that wanted to make sure their voice was heard. Because the good news and the bad news about democracy is the same news. It represents the people. And right now, the people are split down the middle. And we need to figure out a way to bring them back together. That's really the bottom line for me. I don't think we're going to move the country forward unless we can do that.
Well, what I was hearing today with the pundits on the big boy channels, CNN, Fox, and MSNBC, was that the reason Trump and his folks started swinging right away, i.e. yesterday, is that they're not going to take it anymore. They're not going to lay down. They're not going to let the misinformation get out there. They're not going to let, I forget the one quote, oh, that he had moved Martin Luther King's statue out of the Oval Office, and it turned out that he had just moved it to a different place within the Oval Office. But that first report went kind of viral. That's the kind of stuff that they're going to not take that. That's why we're seeing some vitriol right away, because they're letting everybody know, nope, it's not business as usual. You don't get to say what you want to say, regardless of the truth. And it's not going to be pretty, I think, initially, until people understand where the boundaries are. Because I don't think they've been defined this way before.
I hope that's true, Maria, but let's not forget that this man spent 6 years. This man spent 6 years pushing fake news with millions of his own dollars, trying to prove that the president of the United States was not born in the United States, which is about the most ridiculous false fake news that was ever out there. So let's hope that's true, but he shouldn't be criticizing the media for
he's one entity. He doesn't quote represent both sides of the aisle or objective or, but I think I've shared this with you. When I had my radio programs and you go through the news, I always pulled three or four sources and always one from outside the United States to get their perspective, usually from the UK. And the same story had different information. What it occurred to me is that there is only one story. There's only one fact. There's only one incident, but it's human beings that are involved in the reporting of the story. And that's where the problem lies. And it's not that you can automate it or get a robot involved in that, but we have our biases, we have our partisanship, we have our point of view, and that's, I think, where we get into trouble.
Right.
What's the truth?
I agree with that. And I think that, you know, if they asked me to put together a list of 10 things that I thought were important to pass on to the next generation, one of them would be, you know, Albert Einstein's what you see depends on where you're standing. You know, the theory of relativity. It's all relative to you. And so, you know, as I've told you before, I listen to MSNBC, but I also listen to Fox because I understand that the truth lies somewhere between the two extremes. It's never one. And we need to do more of that. I think, unfortunately, that what most people do, however, is they don't look for the truth. They look for things that support their belief system.
Right. It's a human condition thing that you want to be right, and the brain wants to be right. So you seek what you see is similar to what you feel. And I've never been that way. I know what I think, and I know what I feel. I want to hear what other people think and other people feel. And oftentimes when I'm in conversations with folks, I never let on about my opinion because what does it matter? I know what my opinion is. I'm just listening to what other opinions are. And also by not taking it personally, unless they start with a finger pointing and it gets into my personal space.
Well, you know what? Yeah, and we're all subjected to that. You know, I'm a politician and I try to have the same attitude that you do. But there are times, I mean, I've had people stand up in public forum and say things like, you say, yes, ma'am, do you have a question? And they'll stand up and say, why are you an idiot? And, you know, how are you supposed to answer? Well, I come from a long line of idiots.
I come by it naturally.
You know, right. You know, I work hard at being an idiot. But so it's hard sometimes.
Behavior.
Sometimes you lash out. But for the most part, I that's exactly right. You can never learn anything new from somebody that agrees with you. You need that. You know, John F. Kennedy was famous for trying to, you know, that was his management style. He would try to get a bunch of people in a room that had different opinions and sit back and listen and try to figure out who he agreed with.
And what, like you say, what is the truth? Because it should rise. But I wanted to say on another note, the news, it got recirculated this weekend. I don't know why, but how expensive it is for parents to raise children.
Oh, my God.
Like a quarter of $1 million.
Yeah.
And I was wondering, as you with your three and me with my four, if someone had pulled me aside and said that back in the day, would we have made a different decision? And I wouldn't have.
I don't think we would have either. But I must say that my opinion is that it's a bad investment. In terms of return,
it is.
I haven't seen any return. I haven't seen any return on my $750,000 yet. So, you know, if you're choosing between children and blue chip stocks or real estate, think carefully. I don't think we would. Right, you didn't do it. You didn't. Ever, I'm sure you didn't ever say to yourself, "How many children can I afford? Let me see, and I'll do that." You know.
Well, I remember my mom saying to me early on, "If you think you can afford it, you can't, because there's always going to be a newer car, or a better television, or a newer form of technology, or another trip that you want to take." Which is why some people don't have children, because they do want to do those things, and they don't want to have to make the choice. But I have to tell you, here's where the investment comes back. This week, randomly, I won't say who, it's one of my four, on Tuesday night at 9 o'clock, sent me this text. and I just thought of it after you mentioned the investment thing. I didn't set this up to share this, but said, spent time with a coworker today who told me some heartbreaking stories of her childhood. Thank you so much for making my childhood such a wonderful time of my life. I love you.
Wow, you live for those moments, don't you?
Well, yeah. Who knew that they were coming? You don't give to get. Not with children especially, but I don't do that in any relationship. I give to give. I expect there to be some mutual benefit because I am not Mother Teresa, but I don't give to get. So when that rolled in, and of course, who burst into tears? Yours truly. But it's like, wow, that was unsolicited, unprompted, unexpected, and there's the investment return.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. And you know what? You have to keep those things in mind because I say to my kids, very often I say to my kids, the only reason that I didn't kill you when you were teenagers was because nobody killed me. I remember the pain in the ass I was, and they let me survive. So I felt obligated to extend the same privilege to you. But
by the grace,
and you know that's so true. You say to your son 100 times, hold the door open for somebody, or give up your seat or whatever. And the first time he does it without you saying it. Yeah, you say, yeah, that's great. He was listening. I never knew he was listening. Or the first time they say thanks or do something really noble. You know what they say, behind every successful child is a mother who's amazed. So, they grow up,
They do.
And it's amazing. And that is your... That is your reward. Well, let's talk about a couple of other things that happened this week. First of all, on the local front, I have to put this out, that D.C. has already been attacked 3 times. 3 times we've been attacked. Since,
what do you mean?
Well, Congress has won. Marco Rubio has put in legislation that would change the gun laws in the District of Columbia. And would say that the people of District of Columbia never had a right to make a gun law again. Only the federal government can make gun laws for them. Number two, we have a death in dignity law that just passed. I think California has a similar law.
Yes. Taking a class on that this week because ours passed June 1st of last year.
Well, we just passed the law. But as you know, Maria, all our laws have to sit on Capitol Hill for 30 legislative days before they're approved. So there's been 2 other congressmen, members of the House, that have introduced legislation not to approve the law, and that would defeat, and then it wouldn't become law in the District of Columbia. And third, and this is something that I went to jail for in 2009 when I sat in front of the United States Senate. They have there's new legislation that's been proposed to not allow the District of Columbia to spend its own tax money to fund poor women's abortions. Now, there's a federal ban. You can't spend federal money on it, but many states and localities spend money on poor women. In the District of Columbia, it's not a very big expenditure. I think it was $80,000 in a year the last time I looked, because there are many other organizations that do it, like Planned Parenthood. It's symbolically they want to step on our right to fund these medical procedures for poor women. So
do you feel like you've got a babysitter on you presently, always watching over you, like you're not an adult enough to take care of your own business? That must be annoying.
Yes. It's what I say all the time. I go, when it comes to our finances, because people realize that we don't have a vote in Congress, but many of them do not realize that we don't have control over our own budget. And they say to you, what do you mean you don't have control over our own budget? And I say, we're the national teenager. We've been given the credit card, but we're not allowed to spend the money unless we call home. You know, if it's over $50, then we got to call mom and dad and see if it's all right. And that's exactly how it feels. It feels like, they're trying to tell you, that they are your parents. And I remember standing in front of the Supreme Court protesting one time in, a few years ago when we had a monumental decision called the Heller decision, U.S. versus Heller, where on our gun control laws, and people saying to me, why are you against guns? And I was saying to them, I'm not against guns. I'm against people from Maryland and Virginia and Wyoming and California and Texas telling us what we can do with our guns. I don't want to go to Texas and tell you that you can't have a carry permit. But if I want to do that in Washington and the rest of the voters of Washington support me, then I want that to be the law in Washington. It can be different in Maryland, Virginia, wherever. And I think it should be different. You know, Kathleen, who used to be one of the co-hosts, would make this argument with me all the time that she thought that the gun laws of New York, where she lived for a long time, New York City, and the gun laws of Arizona needed to be different because the circumstances were different. And I agree.
Well, the demographics are different. And
right, and the demographics.
The philosophies are different.
Yes.
But, Michael, is this ever going to change if you don't get statehood?
No. It's never going to change. And I wrote a letter to the Washington Post. I don't know if they'll print it today because there were two letters in the Post telling Congress – two letters from Washingtonians today telling Congress to back off and stay out of our business. But you know what? Congress will not back off and stay out of our business as long as we let them in our business. You know, you have to. There's a point at which you have to stand up and say, we're not going to take it anymore. And the only way we can really do that is to become a state. And people don't talk about statehood. They write in and they say, Congress, stay out of our business. Well, you know, the way to keep Congress out of our business in D.C. is the same way you do it in California. You don't, you run your own, you know, you have your own state.
Chiefdom.
You're independent. Right. And, yeah. And they can only influence you when you violate federal law, not when, you know, you can pass. What is, how many referendums did you have on your ballot?
We had, you know, I want to say 17.
17?
But it might have been as high as 21. Well, it finally went into the double. We had an AA because we had run out of the letters.
Yeah.
And I don't mean AA as in Alcoholics Anonymous.
Right.
It was just Measure AA or Prop
right.
AA.
Right. You can't use the alphabet anymore because there aren't enough letters, right? You have to go to the Greek alphabet or whatever to supplement. But before we leave, we're coming to the end of the show, and I want to say I've got a nasty thing to say about Democrats and a nasty thing to say about our new president, and I want to say them both. And the first one is directed at Democrats. I supported what the women did in their march yesterday, but I think that the 60 Democratic Congress members of Congress that didn't show up for the inauguration were wrong. They're setting the wrong tone. This is our president. We have to get along with them. And you know what? I watched Hillary Clinton get up there and sit next to him after all that had gone on. And damn it, if she had the courage to come to the inauguration.
And she had a lovely disposition and smile
right.
on her face.
Right.
She
and
was
pay
gracious.
Respect to this office. That's right. She was able to say, you know, we all know in honesty that she's got no love lost for Donald Trump, but she respects the office of the president, and the members of Congress that
correct.
Didn't show up should have respected the office of the president as well. And that's my criticism of them. And my criticism of President Trump, and let's get used to calling him President Trump, mm-hmm. was that he had a chance in his inaugural speech to mend fences, and he didn't do it. He gave a campaign speech instead. And I think that that was a missed opportunity on his part. So I think they both screwed up this week. A missed opportunity by the Democrats to hold out an olive branch of conciliation to the new president, and a missed opportunity on the part of the new president to hold that same sort of olive branch out to America and try to heal it. And I hope that both sides can come together. I truly hope that.
Interesting that's because when he said America, the government hasn't been then fair, free America, the government has left behind America, the politicians have only benefited from the system, he was being inclusive. But you're saying it was really only directed to the folks who believed in him?
No, I'm saying when he said that the people in Washington have gotten wealthy while the people of America had suffered, first of all, that's not true. And second of all, it was divisive. I think when he says America first, always first, that he sends a message to the world that's divisive. I think he should have said, the first thing he did, which offended me, was that we've both just discussed how Hillary Clinton came and had a disposition. He talked about everybody on the podium but her. He should have said she ran a good campaign. This is Politics 101. The first thing I said in my acceptance speech was, God bless the woman that ran, that had the office before me, that I ran against. And that, he didn't do that. He didn't hold out. He didn't say we should come together anywhere. He said that things are going to change, and we're going to. He preached to his constituency, and I understand that as a politician, but that was the wrong place to do it. That was a place to bring us together, in my opinion.
Interesting, and I guess because he was singing to, I'm in that choir that he's talking to, I didn't have those feelings. Because I do think that there's nothing wrong with us putting ourselves first. I've only learned to do that as a human being when I turned 50, and my motto became, it's about me too, because I always put everybody else first, family of origin, then husband, then children. And I don't see there's anything wrong, but of course I'm older now, I'm wiser. If you put yourself first and you get yourself and your needs met, you're a better person to help meet the needs of others.
I'm not saying that what he said was not the truth. What I'm saying is he missed an opportunity, you know, that if you and I are friends and we've had a terrible fight, when I sit down with you, I don't say, Maria, I want to make it clear that this is who I am. What I do is I hug you. I say, I'm sorry, whatever, let's work out whatever differences we had. And yesterday was his chance to hug America, and he didn't do it. That's what I think.
To hug his detractors.
Yes.
Because he did hug those who are of like mind.
Yes.
I felt hurt. But I'm in his fold. So I do hear what you're saying, Michael. I do hear that.
And let's hope, you know, he's got a steep learning curve. This isn't something he's ever done before. So let's hope that he rises to the occasion. We've seen it before. I'm willing to give him the benefit of the doubt. We've seen it before. We've seen history make great men. Is there any Republican that's ever lived that you would have put in the Oval Office in 1863 besides Abraham Lincoln? Is there any, you know, who was made by the circumstances, right? He was a great president. He kept America together. But it was the circumstances much as anything that you know, made that happen. So I hope that President Trump learns and grows into the office quickly.
Well, he does have a short learning curve, so we'll see, right?
and to show my great respect for Republicans and my conciliatory spirit, I want to give Maria Sanchez the last word. So you have the last word, and we'll see you next week.
Just that what you and I do here every week, week in and week out, is a prime example of what it is that we hope the rest of the country can do, and the world, is, yes, you can disagree, and you can do so respectfully, and please just be honest, and please just be forthright, and please put your money where your mouth is, and walk the walk and talk the talk.
Couldn't have said it better. Goodbye, Thank America. You. We'll see
Goodbye.
You next week.
Yes.
Give the people their right to vote.